Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're really getting into something crucial. It underpins, well, all healthy human relationships, really. Sexual consent.
Yeah.
And our deep dive is focusing completely on Dr. Milena Popova's book, Sexual Consent. It's a really powerful piece of work.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it feels like we need this book now more than ever. Popova argues right from the start that the way we usually talk about consent, it's just not enough.
How so?
Well, relying on those, like, bare minimum legal definitions or just social guesswork, it's fundamentally inadequate, especially after hashtag Me Too, right? Yeah. That really showed us how low the legal floor often is. It just fails to account for things like coercion or power imbalances, even trauma.
Okay. So that's really the core mission of the book, then, to move beyond just sort of avoiding assault.
Exactly. It's about pushing far beyond that insufficient legal line and actually building an ethical culture.
A culture. Wait, what does that look like?
A culture where sexual interactions are genuinely built on, you know, real, enthusiastic, freely expressed desire. It's a big shift. Requires a total paradigm shift in how we even think about choice.
Okay, so to really understand this shift, maybe we should look at the author herself, Dr. Milena Popova. What's her background?
Right. So she's an academic, a researcher, a writer, has a PhD in media and communications, and her background is pretty key here.
Why is that?
Because her work isn't just stuck in, like, gender studies theory. She connects sexuality to digital cultures, to power structures, and crucially, to the lived experiences of marginalized groups.
Ah, so she's bridging theory and practice.
Totally. That's what makes her perspective so incredibly potent. She combines that, you know, rigorous academic stuff, the deep sociology and gender analysis, with very practical grassroots experience.
From where?
She's drawing insights from real-world communities. Places like fan communities, BDSM spaces, feminist organizing groups, places where people are actually consciously practicing these complex negotiations around consent. She's not just theorizing from an ivory tower.
Okay, and that leads to her approach being intersectional, you mentioned.
Yeah, explicitly intersectional. She just refuses to treat consent like it's this one-size-fits-all universal thing.
Because it isn't.
Exactly. She constantly pushes us, the readers, to look at the structural constraints. You know, how does your race, your class, your gender identity, your disability status, how does that actually shape your ability to freely say yes or no?
So less focus on just individual choice, more on the systems that limit that choice.
Precisely. She's looking at the systems.
Okay, let's really dig into that central thesis then, because it sounds like a major departure. Popova is saying consent is not just the passive absence of someone saying no.
Emphatically not, yeah. That whole passive idea, that belongs to the old, frankly broken framework.
So how does she frame it instead?
She frames it as an active, ongoing negotiation, not a one-off yes or no. And it's something that's deeply embedded in our social reality, in power dynamics.
How does power come into it?
Well, think about it. If you feel like saying yes is somehow tied to your safety or your job or just your basic survival, is that yes really free? Popova would say it's compromised.
Right. So the core question driving the book isn't just, did they say the word yes? It's broader.
Much broader. It's more like, how can we actually create the conditions, the structural, the social conditions, where meaningful sexual agency becomes possible for everyone?
Wow. That reframes consent completely. It becomes about sexual justice, not just, like, good manners.
Exactly, sexual justice. And the book's structure really reflects that ambition. She carefully takes apart the dominant narratives first.
Like the focus on individual empowerment.
Yeah, she critiques that sort of liberal feminist focus on just choosing your way out of problems. She deconstructs that before rebuilding the foundation from the ground up.
And building towards what?
Towards what she calls sexual justice and collective liberation. She actually links the fight for genuine consent to much broader social justice movements like anti-racism, disability justice. Hmm. It's a call to transform the whole system, not just tweak individual behaviors.
Okay, that's a huge scope. Let's get into some specifics then. You mentioned her critique of individual choice in chapter one. Why isn't even the yes means yes model, which sounds pretty good on the surface, enough for her?
Well, because it tends to hide those structural inequalities we were just talking about. Popova uses this term choice feminism.
Choice feminism.
Yeah, she uses it to critique the idea that, you know, marginalized individuals can just sort of choose their way out of systemic problems through personal empowerment alone.
Right, like just lean in or be assertive.
Exactly. If you're poor or queer or a person of color or disabled, just being told to be empowered doesn't magically remove the very real material risks that might come with saying no in certain situations.
That makes a lot of sense. If the problem is systemic, the solution can't just be personal willpower. Okay, so if we accept that critique, how do we actually do enthusiastic consent better between people? That's where Chapter 5 comes in, right? With the Fries model.
Yes. Fries is so important because it turns consent from this sort of vague boundary into a practical communication tool. It's an acronym, easy to remember, and it outlines 5 standards for ethical sexual interaction. These are basically non-negotiable.
Okay, let's break it down. What's the F and the R?
F is for freely given. This means zero pressure, no guilt trips, no manipulation, no wearing someone down. If someone seems reluctant or unsure, it's not freely given. Simple as that.
Okay. And R?
R is for reversible. This is crucial. Saying yes right now doesn't lock you in for the next 5 minutes or the next hour or forever. You can change your mind at absolutely any point.
And that change has to be respected.
Without question, without anger, without making the person feel bad about it, it needs to be genuinely okay to stop.
Got it. Then I is for informed.
Right. Informed, meaning you actually know what you're agreeing to. Saying yes to making out isn't a blanket permission slip for everything else.
Does that include things like health risks?
Definitely. Popova stresses that being informed includes things like STI status, condom use, that's part of ethical risk management, and being truly informed about what you're consenting to.
Okay. And the last two, E and S. You said these are maybe the biggest shift.
I think so, yeah. E is for enthusiastic. This means active, willing participation, not just passively going along with it. Ambiguity, hesitation, silence. Popova is clear. That's a no.
So looking for an active yes, not just the absence of no.
Exactly. And S ties into that. Specific. You need to get consent for each new type of activity or each escalation. Yes to kissing isn't yes to touching. Yes to touching isn't yes to oral sex, and so on.
It forces you to actively communicate and seek that enthusiastic participation at every step.
Mm-hmm. Constantly checking in.
Okay, shifting gears a bit. Popova also talks a lot about the law, right? In chapters 3 and 4, you mentioned earlier the law is just a floor, not a ceiling. What are the big problems with relying on the legal system for defining consent?
Well, one huge flaw is how the law has historically dealt with resistance. For a long time, in many places, the law practically required proof of physical resistance for something to count as assault.
Which is completely out of sync with how people actually react to fear.
Totally. And Popova brings up a really critical concept here. Tonic immobility.
Tonic immobility. Yeah. Okay, what is that exactly? It sounds important.
It really is. It's a physiological survival response, like involuntary paralysis. Freezing up. It happens when someone is so terrified they literally can't fight or flee. Their body just shuts down.
Wow.
And because the person isn't visibly struggling, maybe not even saying no out loud because they can't, the legal system has historically just struggled to recognize that non-response for what it is, which is non-consent. It shows how those minimalist definitions completely fail when faced with real trauma responses.
That immediately highlights why you can't separate consent from power or psychology. And in chapter 2, she talks about something called the economics of desire. That sounds provocative. What does she mean by that?
It's pretty radical, yeah. Essentially, Popova uses intersectionality to show how privilege, or the lack of it, directly shapes someone's sexual agency.
How so?
Well, if you're financially vulnerable, maybe worried about housing, or economically dependent on someone else, that whole context compromises your freedom to say no, doesn't it?
Absolutely. If it's your boss or your landlord or maybe a partner who controls all the money, if they ask for something sexual and saying yes feels tied to keeping your job or keeping a roof over your head,
then that choice isn't really free, is it? It might look like desire on the surface, but underneath it's driven by economic necessity, compliance for survival.
Which is why she argues for a trauma-informed approach in Chapter 3, because trauma isn't just an individual issue.
Exactly. She actually calls trauma a predictable response to oppressive systems. It's not a personal failing.
Mm-hmm.
Things like dissociation, freezing, other survival strategies, they're common reactions to overwhelming threat or oppression.
And simplistic consent models just can't handle that complexity.
Right. They often assume this perfectly rational, assertive individual who can always clearly say no. That just doesn't match reality for a lot of people, especially those navigating trauma or systemic oppression. It reinforces the need for systemic change, not just individual advice.
So this all builds towards the societal level, which she discusses in Chapter 6, moving from what we call rape culture towards a consent culture. She uses hashtag MeToo as a key example here. What did hashtag MeToo really expose?
Well, it wasn't just about outing a few powerful individuals, though that was part of it. It really acted as this huge cultural rupture. It laid bare the sheer scale of the problem, the systemic nature of it. It showed how deeply embedded certain norms were in our society. You know, that tendency to minimize sexual violence, to blame victims, to excuse perpetrators. That environment made compromised consent or outright non-consent feel almost routine in some contexts.
And hashtag MeToo showed that just telling individuals to speak up wasn't cutting it.
Exactly. It proved that individual awareness campaigns, while maybe well-intentioned, were simply not enough. We needed, and still need, a fundamental cultural reckoning.
Okay. So there's a lot here. If we had to boil it down for listeners, what are the absolute core takeaways from Popova's work? Maybe three key themes.
Yeah, okay. Three big ones. First, I'd say consent is an active process, not a passive state.
Right.
Meaning it's not like signing a contract and you're done. It's an ongoing dialogue. It has to be actively built, actively maintained. It requires checking in, engaging, not just waiting for someone to wave a red flag.
Okay, active process was the second.
Second, and this is maybe the biggest political point. The inadequacy of individual solutions. Popova hammers this home.
Right, the critique of choice feminism.
Exactly. Individual empowerment alone just isn't enough to fix systemic problems. If we want real safety, real agency for everyone, it requires collective action. It requires structural transformation. She calls it sexual justice, addressing the root causes.
And the third theme.
Third has to be power dynamics are central. This runs through absolutely everything in the book.
How so?
Any yes that's given under pressure, whether that's economic pressure, social pressure, professional pressure, is compromised. It's not a truly free yes. So real ethical consent requires us to first acknowledge those power imbalances and then actively try to mitigate them before anything sexual even happens.
Acknowledge and mitigate power. Okay, those are huge. And Popova's writing, from what you're saying, is full of these really memorable ways of putting things, like quotes that stick with you.
Oh, definitely. She has these powerful reframing statements. Let's maybe look at a couple that really capture her shift in thinking.
Sounds good.
Okay, how about this one? The question is not whether someone said yes, but whether the conditions existed for them to meaningfully say no.
Wow. Okay, that completely flips the script, doesn't it?
Right. It shifts the focus away from blaming the individual for maybe not resisting enough.
Mm-hmm.
And puts it squarely on the environment, on the power dynamics, the constraints operating on them. It's a totally different ethical standard.
Powerful. What's another one?
This one connects consent to broader struggles. Sexual liberation cannot exist within systems of oppression. It requires their transformation.
So sexual freedom isn't separate from social justice.
Not at all. She's basically saying you can't achieve real autonomy in your sex life if you're being marginalized economically or socially outside the bedroom. The fight for, say, housing justice or racial justice is part of the fight for sexual justice. They're interconnected.
Okay. And maybe one more. You mentioned the law being the floor.
Ah, yes. This one sums it up beautifully. Ethical sex begins where the law ends.
Simple, but says so much.
Exactly. The law is just about avoiding criminal charges, staying out of jail. Ethics, in Popova's view, demands much more. It demands dignity, respect, enthusiasm, mutual care. It's about aspiring to something far higher than just bare minimum compliance.
So this all sounds really important, but maybe a bit theoretical. How does Popova suggest we translate these big ideas into, like, everyday actions? How can listeners start applying this, maybe using that Fries model?
Yeah, definitely. In our relationships, romantic, sexual, even friendships, it means practicing proactive communication, mm-hmm. using specific language.
Like what?
Like actually asking, how does that feel right now? Or, hey, I was thinking about maybe trying this. What do you think? Do you want to move to the next step? Things like that. But maybe even more important is normalizing changing your mind.
Making it okay to say stop.
And genuinely okay, without fear of the other person getting angry or sulky or making you feel guilty. If your partner reacts badly when you withdraw consent, that's a huge red flag. That's not a consent culture.
And what about for parents or educators? How does this apply?
It's vital for raising the next generation. We need to teach bodily autonomy from a super young age.
What does that look like practically?
It means respecting a child's no, even to something seemingly harmless, like a forced hug from a relative. It means modeling consent in daily interactions, teaching kids explicitly that their body belongs to them and only them.
Okay. And in our wider social circles, workplaces, friend groups.
There, it's about being an active bystander, not letting things slide. Challenge victim blaming when you hear it. Call out jokes that minimize sexual assault or trivialize consent.
Use the language.
Yeah, use the language of enthusiasm, specificity, fries. Talk about these things openly. And push for better policies in our communities, our workplaces, policies based on this affirmative, enthusiastic standard of consent.
You know, diving into Popova's work for this, my biggest kind of surprise or maybe realization was that focusing on all this communication, this enthusiasm, it doesn't actually make sex awkward or clinical.
Right. It seems counterintuitive sometimes.
Yeah. But it actually seems to enhance intimacy. When you reframe consent not as this, like, bureaucratic checklist you have to get through.
As the actual foundation for connection.
Exactly. Yeah. As the foundation for better, more connected, and honestly, probably more pleasurable sexual experiences.
Yeah.
That's when it clicks.
Yeah.
That's the power of this whole paradigm shift, I think. It's not about restriction, it's about enhancement.
Absolutely. And for me, I think the biggest takeaway, the thing that really sticks, is that shift away from seeing consent as just this individual, isolated transaction. You know, did I get a yes? Okay, check.
Mm-hmm.
And moving towards understanding it as a collective ethical practice, something we build together. Mm. It's political work, like she says. It requires systemic change, yes. But it also demands that each of us, individually and collectively, aspires to that standard that's much higher than just what the law requires. It's about building that culture actively.
A really profound and honestly very necessary exploration for everyone, really, no matter your background or relationship situation.
Couldn't agree more.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.